Why, yes, it is a Thursday. It's time to talk to the voice of the KU Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. Now, Brian, I'm sure you'd be doing better if the KU Jayhawks would not be in the midst of a three-game losing streak, but please, please help all those KU fans in North Central Kansas listen to the Sports Ticket every Thursday and anxiously await your appearance on the show. Tell them to back away from the cliff, that it's okay, that it's still just January. Can you help us with that?
That's right, yeah. Tell the Chicken Littles to calm down. The sky is not falling.
Good deal.
Bill Self was quick to say that on Hawk Talk the other night. You know, the reality of the situation is they've lost three games to teams all ranked in the top 20 at the time we faced them, two of which were on the road. The two games on the road, you know, were neck-and-neck games. Obviously, we felt like we should have won the K-State game when DeJuan Harris has two very un-DeJuan-like turnovers at the end of regulation and overtime. And so even on a night when Kansas shot 6 of 29 at K-State, you still had a chance to win it. So if you win that game, nobody's talking about the sky is falling or nearing a ledge, as you phrased it. But because that game was followed by a home blowout, which hardly ever happens, it definitely was cause for concern with some. And then, you know, it just so happens that this is a year in the Big 12 where you don't have any let up on your schedule and you don't have a game to get right in the win column and get extra minutes for your bench. Everything is a grind every single night. And so losses have piled up, and it's just the fourth time in 20 years under Bill Self that he's had a stretch of three straight defeats. But when you look at who they played and where they played these games, it's easy to see why it happened. The TCU game is the outlier because it was at home and he's only lost 17 times in 20 years at home. But they opened 13 of 15. Bill Self said it, and I agree, they would have beaten anybody on that day. I mean, they were just scorching the Nets, and we never recovered. And in these other games, you know, we found a way to claw back in it on Monday night, took a lead, you know, 46-45, 5 minutes into the second half, and then a series of, you know, big Baylor momentous plays with some challengeable or questionable whistles, you know, happened. It obviously led to a Bill Self technical foul. So, you know, that's not making excuses. That's just calling it like it is on how the game turned. But we saw our team be resilient and bounce back. What's concerning is the way these opponents are racing out to quick leads.
Mm-hmm.
Down 14 right out the gate in Manhattan. Down 22 at home to TCU. Down 13 right out the gate versus Baylor. And I asked Coach Self, is there a common denominator there? And he said, you know, we could be better defensively. But in some cases, they've just come out and they've hit some amazing shots, just stone cold, unconscious, red hot out the gates, and got to find a way, you know, to hopefully be better in that regard and not giving up these huge runs. Because as Coach Self described it, when you're trailing by double digits every time, you may claw back to tie the game, but it takes twice as much energy and effort knowing that you don't have margin for error at that point, and you almost have to be perfect on both ends. And he compared it to wrestling. He said when you're on the bottom in wrestling, you have to exert twice as much effort to get out from underneath the person pinning you. And he said that, you know, by the time you finally do, you're literally exhausted,
yeah,
and you're just as vulnerable as you were when you were underneath them. And so I think that was a pretty good metaphor. And so for Kansas, hopefully a faster start on Saturday. But, you know, the other thing that's concerning is when you play smaller, like we have to right now, because Ernest and Zuby aren't as far along as we would have hoped, and KJ's been great, but he's still just 6'7", you're going to be prone to giving up offensive rebounds. And we saw the other night the 17 offensive boards that Baylor was able to get. And, you know, as you stare down the barrel at Oscar Tshiebwe coming up on Saturday, it's not going to get easier anytime soon. So Kansas is going to have to find a way to rebound better from its wing positions with Grady and Jalen and KJ in the post. And we are seeing Ernest get more opportunities, which is good. But clearly these are a few things we can't change, you know, when it comes to height disadvantage and that kind of thing. Hopefully we can change a faster start. Hopefully DeJuan will take care of the basketball better than what he has. It's been a stretch of three or four games now that does not look like the DeJuan we know and love. Those things you expect to get better. The big man, you know, depth and height mismatch maybe changes a little bit over the next month as those guys get more run off the bench. But KJ's always going to be the starter unless an injury happens. And so that's an inherent disadvantage that isn't going to change anytime soon. And that's the one that probably looms the largest, because the other stuff I think is largely fixable.
I want to jump around a little bit here. I want to get back to specifically some of the issues K is going through, but I want to jump to this one because I'm having a hard time, and I know, yes, you're the voice of Jayhawk, so you might be a little bit biased towards KU, but right now, Brian, you look at the Big 12 standings. Iowa State, K-State, and Texas are all 6-2, and Iowa State, K-State are picked to finish 9th and 10th in the preseason polls. Just tells you what the preseason means, nothing. So 6-2, 6-2, 6-2. TCU, with a great win against K-State at home, demolished KU and Lawrence, and then lost in between at Morgantown. They're 5-3. They're a threat. Baylor obviously has won 5 in a row. They're the hottest team maybe in the Big 12 now, 5-3. KU's 5-3 in the midst of a 3-game losing streak. Despite a 3-game losing streak, KU's only one game out of first. And, of course, a big game Tuesday against K-State after they play Kentucky coming up on Saturday. My question, Brian, is, I mean, who? I'm not telling you to give betting advice here, but, I mean, of those six teams, who do you think right? I mean, I think it's hard to pick Kansas right now because it lost 3 in a row, but if they turn around and win 3 in a row, all of a sudden everybody's going to say KU's still the favorite to win the Big 12. But if you look at this race, and it's a six-team race, who in the world has an advantage right now?
Yeah, it's maybe a little bit of an advantage for K-State with road wins in Waco and Texas already, and they've already gotten the Iowa State game out of the way. Granted, they lost it, but that's not still on their schedule, whereas KU still has to go to Ames, still has to go to Austin. We have already been to Waco but didn't win. But we do have the K-State road game out of the way. K-State has to come to Lawrence, so that's something that knocks down their upcoming schedule in terms of easy pass. But in terms of who has an advantage in a crazy thin, you know, razor thin discrepancy race right now, it's definitely teams that have logged road wins in games they weren't supposed to win. And, you know, TCU stubbing their toe in Morgantown, like you referenced, is one they gave back to the rest of the league. That's like bogeying the easiest hole on a golf course versus getting a win in, say, Allen Fieldhouse is birdieing the number one handicap hole. And so maybe they atone for that with their win on Saturday in a place where a lot of teams will lose. But the point is, it's really hard to separate these clubs right now, so much so that you may have seen on Monday, Ken Pom had a projection based on his metrics that has the Big 12 winner in 5 weeks being a four-way tie at 11-7 between KU, K-State, Iowa State, and Texas, leaving TCU and Baylor one game back at 10-8. Think about that parity. And if that did happen, just so you know, each of the four schools would get a trophy, each would declare a championship. Seeding for Kansas City in a Big 12 tournament would be a mess. That's never happened before. But it's realistic as of today. Do I think it'll happen? No. Could a three-way tie realistically happen? Yeah, it absolutely could. And they'd all get trophies, and they'd all get rings. You know, so we'll be interested to see what happens these next 5 weeks because it's as close as it's ever been in the top six. And when teams 7 and 8, like Oklahoma, for example, like coulda, shoulda, woulda beat Baylor last Saturday. They coulda, shoulda, woulda won in Allen Fieldhouse if they don't give up an 18-4 run over the last 5 minutes. So even though teams like the Sooners and Cowboys aren't being considered as conference title contenders, they're good enough to throw a wrench in the system for sure. And so that's where we say any given night you don't know what the outcome is going to be. But you know, right now, who has the edge? Maybe K-State narrowly. But if Kansas can find a way to win the rest of its home games, which is a big if, obviously, because all the home wins at this point have been by 4 points or less in league play, normally we can count on 8-1 at home, you know, if not 9-0. If you did go 8-1, then, you know, you could actually go 4-5 on the road and still get to 12-6 and feel like you had a piece of this.
Yeah.
If you go 7-2 at home, which affords you one more home loss, then you need to go 5-4 on the road to get to 12. I think 12 is kind of the key number to get a share. I'm not buying the Ken Pom 11-7.
I'm not either.
I think somebody's going to get to 12.
I agree.
13, I think, can win it outright. And the path to 13 is 5-4 on the road, and you win all of your remaining home games.
Yeah.
And that's doable, honestly. It's not asking for that much, but understanding how close we've been in some of our wins, you know, we sit here at 5-3, we could easily be 3-5.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just that close win to loss. It sometimes comes down to the way the ball bounces. So we'll have to see. But I do like our chances because at the end of the day, though the talent has never been evener, that's a word, it's never been more even, and the parity's never been at an all-time high, the one place where there is still a discrepancy, I still believe without a shadow of a doubt we've got the best coach in the league, and he'll make the necessary adjustments both in-game and in-season to give us an edge. Is that worth 3 points a game, 5 points a game? I don't know. But so long as Bill Self's on the sidelines, we have an advantage that the others don't, and that's something that, you know, right now we're clinging to. You asked for reasons to have hope. That's the biggest one right there.
I'm not predicting KU to win the national championship. I'm not saying they can't either, but I do know last January it wasn't like KU was lighting the world on fire. There were tons of questions, and Remy Martin, is he going to come back? He's out. What kind of spark will he be? And, of course, it all came together, and nobody really worries too much about how KU was playing in January. Brian Haney, voice of Jayhawks, brought to you by Interest Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. A couple things about the Jayhawks in particular. What about the burden, the offensive burden, that is on Jalen Wilson and Grady Dick, to be quite honest? And you and I have talked about this before. You know, Kevin McCullough had a couple of games where he struggled offensively. I wouldn't say he's a bona fide offensive player, but he definitely can score at times. We know that. DeJuan Harris doesn't score very often, and he can. And we've seen him hot at first stretches, shooting three, but he'll be the first one to tell you. And I've heard in the post-game interviews with David Lawrence and you guys about how he's all about setting up his teammates, but he turns down a lot of open looks. And then KJ Adams, to me, during the run where KU got to 16-1, especially when they were playing really well early in the Big 12, and he bailed him out a few times with game-winning shots, KJ was scoring anywhere from like 10 to 22, consistent. He was making shots inside. He was playing really well. Now some of those shots are not going for KJ Adams. So I guess it's a two-part question for you, Brian. One, what about the burden on Wilson, who's been great, unfortunately, during the three games that he's been so great here recently? They've lost all three. And then the pressure on Grady Dick to pick up a big chunk of the offensive load. And then KJ Adams, would you agree, is really the X factor to all of this offensively for this team, even though they don't draw up a ton of plays for him?
Yeah, he could be. And, you know, I think that I want to give KJ the benefit of the doubt because it's two down games in a row, but the first of the two was because of foul trouble and never had a chance to get in the flow of the TCU game because of foul trouble. Monday was clearly an off game, and I think the length of Flo Samba and some of the guys on their back line frustrated him for sure. And that's, you know, our anticipation for Saturday with Oscar Tshiebwe, but it's not like he's gone into the deep freeze and he's had two high-volume shooting games where nothing's gone down. He barely scratched his normal, you know, minute output and shot output in the TCU game. Didn't even dent it, honestly, because of the foul trouble. And then just never caught a flow in Waco. He had a couple of really good looks that he normally hit, and I think he was in his head a little bit. And, hey, you know, he's a 19-year-old kid in his true sophomore year that just came off 11 straight games in double figures, and his streak ends, and the next game out, it's a must-win for his team, and he was probably in his head a little bit. Mm-hmm. I get that. Sure. So I don't worry about him as much. You know, Jalen obviously has been tremendous scoring the ball, but prior to Monday, Bill Self said that, you know, when he had his 34-point-per-game week, 38-1, 30 in the other, between the K-State and TCU games, some of our guys had a tendency to stand around and watch and let him do his thing. And we don't want that. You want to have good ball and body movement, whether you have the ball or not, getting in position, because a lot of times now a team's going to start double-teaming him. And we saw great floor vision and court awareness out of Jalen on Monday to pass out of the double-team multiple times to find whoever the wide-open Jayhawk was. Because obviously, for you kids listening at home that want a math lesson, if two players go to cover one guy, that means somebody of the other four is wide open. And Jalen did a great job of finding that wide-open person. And that's going to continue to be the case so long as double teams come. So keep moving without the ball. Keep getting in position to be a ready receiver on the end of that pass, because it can lead to an easy lay-in. Grady's ability to score off the bounce the other night was maybe the biggest positive for chances in terms of silver linings, because in front of 34 NBA scouts representing 16 different teams, he showed, I'm not just a camp around the perimeter and chuck up threes kind of guy. I can get mine off the dribble and get to the rim and finish there. And that will make Kansas much more dynamic, because you can't just face guard and take him away if he's moving more and trying to beat you off the dribble, because again, that makes the help defense suck in and leave somebody open if he's commanding more attention as a more aggressive driver of the ball. And so I think that was a big, big positive takeaway, not only for Kansas as a team, but honestly, that was huge for Grady's draft stock the other night. Keontae George, his fellow McDonald's All-American freshman, did not have a good game. Grady did. And though Grady's team lost, he looked like the much more NBA-ready player between the two. So good night for him. Let's hope it leads to many more Jayhawk wins in the future. But that's kind of my read on those three. And you know, Jalen's gotten himself back in the first-team All-American picture with the recent numbers these last three games. But that's not going to be his easiest ticket to All-American status. It's finishing on a top 10 team that won its respective league. And then you look at the individual numbers, because he could score 30 a night from here on out. But if we finish in sixth place, which right now, based on tiebreakers, technically we're in sixth. Yeah. It's a tie for fourth, but the two teams we're tied with have beaten us head-to-head. If we finish in the middle of the pack in the Big 12, he's not going to get that kind of love. So hopefully the winning and the production happen these next 5 weeks.
All right, matchup with Kentucky coming up on Saturday. And, you know, obviously the SEC Big 12 Challenge in the middle of conference season for both conferences. Man, I watched Kentucky recently, and it's kind of a similar situation to an extent. In regards to Kentucky and Kansas are blue bloods and their high expectations. And Kentucky was ranked high early in the year, and then they've fallen. And it is interesting. Duke's completely out of the top 25. They lost to a 1-7 Virginia Tech team at Virginia Tech in conference play the other night. North Carolina was number one. They've fallen completely out of the top 25 rankings. They're struggling, and it's amazing with all the talent they have back from last year's team that lost to Kansas in the title contest. Kentucky's got a ton of talent, as we know. And I was watching them the other night, and they'd really been struggling, and then they lost to South Carolina, I believe. And then they beat Tennessee. Of course, KU lost to Tennessee. They beat Tennessee, looked good. Looked good in the second half against Georgia recently when I watched them play. And Oscar Tshiebwe had 37 points and 24 rebounds. And I'm watching Kentucky game, Brian, and I'm sitting here and I'm asking myself, and you know what the question is, how does Kansas slow down or deal with Oscar Tshiebwe when you don't have a true five?
Yeah, great question. And obviously he, I don't want to say dominated, but he had a big-time performance versus Kansas in their 18-point win a year ago when we were pitting two National Player of the Year candidates head-to-head. Ochai did not have a great day. Oscar did rise up, and Kentucky went on to win it. Fast forward a year, we don't have in the interior what we had last year, obviously. So I think, you know, we'll find out a little bit from Bill today. He's not going to show his hand at his press conference, but I'm sure he'll get asked a similar question. And, you know, they're going to try to make post touches difficult and to try to, you know, make him catch the ball further away from the basket. And when he does, I'm sure help side defense will start to collapse, but that leaves somebody open. And they've got a multitude of capable scorers around him, whether it's Reeves or Toppin or Wallace. And so you can't sell out to stop one guy when you've got that many other weapons on the floor. But the Hawks will have to be creative. I think for Oscar, going against a smaller, quicker player, it may be something to feast on in terms of rebounding, but it may be more difficult than he thinks in the way that KJ can make those entry passes tougher to get and be more of a pest than maybe what he's used to facing. So we'll see. But the good news is, you know, we've had 4 years of practicing against this guy, including his best routine of time. So they'll have a good game plan for sure. But, you know, can they execute it in what is our smallest front court maybe ever in the Bill Self era? I don't know. It remains to be seen. But I'll tell you what, I like our chances with 5 days to prepare and a very motivated coaching staff and team. We'll see what it all adds up to on Saturday night.
And that's an important game, but honestly not as important as the game coming up on Tuesday. K-State comes back to town on a Tuesday night, 2 weeks after K-State beat KU in overtime 83-82. There is the possibility KU could be on a four-game slide going into that one. I know I've talked to a few K-State fans, and they're really pulling for KU to beat Kentucky because they don't want KU to be on a four-game slide, mad as you know what. And I'm like, whether KU beats Kentucky or not, they're still going to be pretty focused on the K-State game Tuesday night at Allen Fieldhouse. So just your since we won't talk to you again until next Thursday, just your quick thoughts on that rematch on Tuesday night.
Well, if DeJuan Harris returns to form, And again, I really wonder and worry about residual effects from when he hit his face on the floor. And that's not making excuses.
Yeah.
But there's people that I know close to him that just say he's not been the same And I'm not saying he got concussed. He clearly passed the testing that they did when he came to the sideline that night. But when it's a 7 to 10 day typical recovery from a hard hit like that, and you look at his last 7 to 10 days and his decision making and his demeanor, everything is different about DeJuan. If he returns to form this weekend, and he returns to form specifically on Tuesday, then I think Kansas wins that game, and I think they win it by 8 to 12 points. Because without DeJuan coughing it up twice at the end of the regulation and overtime, they should have, could have, would have won on one of their worst shooting nights of the year, 6 to 29. And he did a great job defensively on Noel. And you can't count on that to translate over to the next game either. I think Marquise Noel will be much better. But I think in our building, with all that motivation and hopefully better decision-making with the ball, Kansas should be able to close them out. But, again, in a league this good where, like I said, so many of these games are being decided by 1 and 2 possessions, who knows? But I think if you give us a healthy DeJuan and we're at full strength with all that motivation and incentive, I really, really like our chances in the rematch. And hopefully we get a third, because that probably means the two teams played all the way to Saturday night at the Big 12 Championship in Kansas City. And wouldn't that be fun for the Sunflower State?
It would also be helpful if KU has all 5 of their starters at the end of the game. Obviously, they had 3-2 that fouled out regulation, 1 in overtime, too.
Boy, I buried the lead on that, didn't I? I mean, 60% of our starting lineup wasn't playing at the end of the game. Yeah. Still almost won. So just imagine if they stay out of foul trouble.
Reason to be optimistic, no doubt. Quick 2 off-the-wall questions for you. 1, a little bit off the wall, and that is, give me your Chiefs-Bengals prediction for Sunday night.
Ooh. That's going to be a tough one. You know, you'd have to think the fourth time is a charm for the Chiefs.
You would hope.
Bengals, right? You'd have to think they learn. This is a tough spot for me to be in, because I think the key to the Chiefs' success involves exploiting a former Jayhawk. If Chris Jones can make it a nightmarish evening for Akeem Adeniji trying to protect Joe Burrow, then the Chiefs can win this game. I think how much the Chiefs' defensive front can rattle the cage of Burrow, who seems unflappable, yes, but there's no way that patchwork Bengals offensive line that dominated the Bills should be able to keep doing that with what Steve Spagnuolo has to work with his defensive front 7. And so how much pressure they get on Burrow will be key. Obviously, Mahomes' mobility will be key, and what he can do back there to extend the play with the high ankle sprain. But, you know, they've had 5 straight AFC Championship hostings. If you only make it to 2 Super Bowls out of 5 chances in your home, that seems like a letdown. So give me the home team pulling it out here. But I think that key of the former Jayhawks versus Sac Nation might be as big as any in this game.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis. I like that. All right, time for the true off-the-wall question. So did you see last night it appeared that an Uber Eats delivery guy walked right onto the college basketball floor during the game, right on the end where the players were playing between Duquesne and Loyola Chicago? Did you see this last night?
No, I missed that.
The guy just rolls in like he owns the place, looking to deliver Uber Eats to somebody, and he walks onto the floor while the guy's getting ready to shoot a 3 2 feet in front of him while play is going on. You need to look this up on Twitter. It is the wildest thing ever. So that leads me to the off-the-wall question. This is one of the funnest ones, and this was just created because some guy wandered onto the floor last night during Duquesne and Loyola Chicago. But the off-the-wall question from Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, is, all right, so if there's an Uber Eats, DoorDash, or somebody, whatever it might be, what food do you want delivered to you during the game courtside? What food do you want, Brian, to where you have that quick little, you know, local or network timeout where you can just snarf something down, and while the game's going on, you got the hunger pains, and here comes the Uber Eats guy right off the corner at Allen Fieldhouse going, you know what, I think Brian Haney's hungry, and Greg Gurley ordered something for Brian, and I know that they told me to wait till 4 o'clock to deliver it, but you know what, I'm running a little bit early, I don't want the food to get cold, so I'm going to deliver this to Brian Haney. What's in the bag of goodies that Brian Haney wants courtside?
How about that question?
Yeah.
That's a tough one. Very good off the wall.
Hey, thank you.
There's a lot to think about with this, because as an announcer, there's certain things we don't eat or drink while we're on the air. Like, we have ice cream at halftime every game. I never touch it because it dries out your mouth.
Yep.
You can't talk as clearly and articulately. So it would have to be something that jives with the palate and the vocals. Man, you know, The things I would crave, I probably never would eat in that moment. But I'll plug the sponsor and not my Glen Elder Beloit sponsor, but my local one in Lawrence, 23rd Street Brewery. Bring me the Haney Turkey Stack.
There you go.
I'll be a happy camper with my turkey sandwich with cheese, and I'll probably just take a couple bites until the game's over, but that would be the ultimate for sure.
That is the correct answer. Well done, Brian. Well done.
Thank you.
Hey, man, it's going to be a lot of fun. You talk about two huge games here in late January and against two teams called the Wildcats. We'll see if the Jayhawks can declaw Kentucky down Saturday in Lexington, and then, of course, K-State comes to town on Tuesday. So safe travels, my friend. Have a great time calling these unbelievable matchups, and hopefully we're talking with you next week, talking about a couple of W's.
Sounds great, buddy. Thanks so much.
Take care. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you, as always, every Thursday on the Sports Ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.